we got one on Monday. A big snow day. Tom is not here. He went down to L.A. to watch a bunch of actors give each other awards. Is that what it was?
Something, I mean, he wouldn't frame it like that, I don't think, but yes.
That's what it is. He'd frame it like, oh, I don't know what he
Critics' said. Choice Award. That's
the Critics' Choice Award. There's those that are on the field doing the work, and then there's those sitting on the stands, and there's the people in the back of the stands just complaining the entire time. Those are the critics. Do I have a co-host? Look who's here.
Neither snow nor rain nor darker night will prevent me from filling
That's
in when
right.
Tom hides at some critics' event somewhere.
Back just booing and hissing. By the way, screw you, Tom. I watched Lighthouse on Saturday, and halfway through, I wanted to get off the couch and run to your house and hit you with a sock full of dog crap.
I'm going to wait for the colorized version of that movie.
Duh!
These artistic black and white movies that come out, I think, you know, give me a few decades, put it in color. I mean, don't you remember when I Dream of Jeannie switched from color to and the smoke was pink, for crying out
loud? When they went from Dick York to Dick Stevens, I said, give me any one of them.
Dick Sargent.
Sorry.
Yeah.
By the way, here's the crappy part about that movie. Don't go to Tom's, MyNorthwest.com, Tom's Best Picks of 2019. Pick any one of those, and you will be disappointed. It's amazing. People that watch that like to go to films. I just want to watch a movie.
Cinema.
I don't want to watch a film. I want to watch a movie.
Cinema.
God, was that bad.
Is there a sequel, do you think? I didn't see this. Is this set up for a sequel at the end?
When the guy gets his intestines eaten by a seagull? Sorry, spoiler alert.
Lighthouse 2. They're back for more.
I couldn't understand one word. All right, let's see. Last February, it was a Snowmageddon.
Snowmageddon, they call that. Yeah, that term has gotten kind of tiresome, even for me, the whole Snowmageddon thing, right?
Are you going to historically put this one in perspective for us?
Yeah, because you really have to go back to the big storm of 1846, 1847. That was the really big winter around here.
When people say this is the worst winter I could possibly remember, that's not fair because
it's really
somebody's memory.
It's really well documented too. It was a pretty bad winter in 46, 47. But last February, we got something like 18, 19 inches of snow, 21 inches of snow. It shut down the city for about a week.
Uh-huh.
And they're thinking now, is this something that's happening all the time? Has the climate change, not the climate change, but is this a snow, a fact of life now?
This type of thing.
Yeah,
okay.
So should we be ready for this every year? Is that the point?
That's so the National idea. Weather Service meteorologist Courtney Augerfeld warns it's coming on Wednesday.
We're looking at another system coming in from the south Wednesday into Thursday. Snowfall amounts are uncertain, but it looks like a good shot at accumulating snow again for most areas.
Was there ever a point in the history of Seattle weather and broadcasting that somebody said something on the air that then went on to become historic?
Well, it wasn't what a weather person said. It was what a news anchor said. How much can we say on the air on a family show like this? It was on our sister station. It was when it was Cairo TV. It was early 1970s.
Yes.
There was an anchor whose name was Sandy Hill.
All right.
She went on to great critical acclaim and fame and went to Good Morning America in the mid-1970s or late 1970s.
Yeah.
One evening or one day on a newscast, after snow had been in the forecast the night before, and Harry Wappler, beloved late dear Harry Wappler, who worked for Cairo TV for years and for this station too, he had mentioned he had forecast snow.
Hold one second. Understand that when the teleprompter comes up in order to throw to weather, they don't script it. All it says is anchor TOSSXWX. So anchor tossed to weather. So she reads the last story, and then it says tossed to weather, and then they have to come up, cobble together some sort of coherent sentence to dump it off onto the weather guy so that he can then say something. Okay.
And ideally, it shows like a sense of kind of gravitas, a sense of like, hey, camaraderie, we're friends, we know each other. And this anchor, and I've never seen the tape, and it could be totally apocryphal, but she said something like along the lines of,
hold on
hey,
a second,
Harry.
Hang on a second.
Hey, Harry.
No, you don't work here. Hang on.
Oh, God. Why do you always hold it over my head?
Hang on. Are we allowed to say this?
I don't know. I don't think it's advisable until I find out for sure.
Well, I mean, play some nice music so we can just discuss this for one second.
It's a double entendre, right?
Right. Okay. Andrew's going to bring some music up so the audience can listen to the music
while we
need to talk to Jacob.
Should we step out?
We don't need to. I only take step out in order to get Tom to put Tom. So we're going off. Just ask Jacob if we can do this. All right. All right, you suck.
Welcome back to the Cairo Radio. Right, it's the Tom and Curly Show.
Suck, Jacob.
So anyway, so the anchors look. I'll tell you the clean version of it, the zero entendre version
all right,
of it.
Okay.
And so the snow that had been forecast did not materialize.
Yeah.
And Sandy Hill allegedly said to Harry Wappler as she tossed him, "Hey, Harry, what happened to the snow that you promised me last night?"
I got it. But
she actually referred to the amount of snow he had promised.
I see. There we go.
And she didn't
use
the word
snow. Are you all right over there, prude boy? You okay, prude boy?
Yeah, we're safe.
And she didn't use the word snow.
No.
She just referred to the amount.
And a metric, a unit that someone would use in order
to measure.
A
measure of length.
A measure of
length. Or distant or depth.
And she asked where it is.
Yes, exactly. What happened to it that was promised?
Fine.
I think the promise part is what made it sound really lascivious.
Thank you for sucking all the life out of that story, Jacob.
Phew.
All right. Well, anyway, it comes back on Wednesday.
Commercial break. I can't do any more of the show. I'm done.
It comes back Wednesday. We get another chance for more snow in the forecast as temperatures drop and the system moves.
And Dave will say, "Hey, Nick Allard."
By the way, speaking of snow and weather, today is the day that I first went on the air. It was January 13th, 1989.
Wow.
And every single year, I call Mike Moran, the man that hired me and gave me my start in broadcasting, and I thank him. And he always sounds like this, "Oh, hey, John, how are you? Oh, hey, it's good to hear from you. How are you doing?" That's exactly what he'll sound
so
like.
So he's sincere and earnest. You just kind of dance around him with your jokes and stuff. He's like the straight man.
I keep it short. Yeah. Yeah. I just get on, just thank him for the job. And he's like, "Hey, so where are you now? Oh, you know, listen, you're terrific." So every year I call him. So I said to Jacob, "Can I call him on the air? We're going to surprise him, get him on the air." I'll say, "Hey, Mike Moran, you're live on the air." Now, the last time he was live on the air, it cost him his job. So we have to be very, very careful.
Remember, Inside Edition,
when he said the thing about the person being killed?
No, I remember. Yeah. No, okay.
Harry Wappler was involved in that, too, I understand.
I don't know how much of a surprise it'll be since I had to call him. What was I supposed to tell him?
It's just nothing. You don't call ahead. You do the old, like, radio thing.
They used to
do in the 80s. You just put him on the air. You called ahead. Good Lord. You know, you're Mr. Just, you know, Mr. Prudy Boy, and now you're Mr. Work Everything Out Guy. I don't even have a nickname for you. That's how bad you are. All right, moving on. We done talking about the snow?
So it's more rough weather's coming. It's going to be cold and icy tomorrow. That's worse than snow. I can't stand driving in the ice.
All right, thank you very much for your personal comments on that. By the way, I like your new glasses.
Well, they're just for reading.
Let's see. There's Como talks to Shama Sawant, one of the outed socialists on the city council.
I don't think she was ever cloaked, was she?
Well, the other ones are. Here's her new plan for taxing you.
We are launching Tax Amazon campaign.
Seattle City Council member Shama Sawant is going after the company that tried to bring her down.
Even though these billionaires spent all this money, we were still able to have ordinary people's voices prevail.
In November's election, the far majority of Amazon-backed candidates lost, despite the tech company pumping in more than $1.5 million. And Sawant, arguably Amazon's top target, will soon temporarily take over the role of council president. And she says the top priority of the council in 2020 is tax big businesses like Amazon.
We don't want small businesses to be taxed. We don't want working people to be taxed. Only the large corporations who don't pay their fair share should be taxed.
What it will look like, we're not exactly sure. But Sawant said only the top 2 or 3% of Seattle businesses would be taxed to fund what Sawant calls publicly owned, permanently affordable housing. Oh. And Sawant is...
Imagine that, investing in that permanently owned public housing. Public housing. You want to see public housing? Go to Chicago. Go to Washington, D.C. That's public housing.
Go to what they have in Russia. Wait. Full disclosure, I do work for a King County Housing Authority as a consultant, and they do some really beautiful public housing developments. We're blessed in this area. We have some amazing public housing stock in in King County in Seattle.
Okay.
So. True. Will not repeat itself.
It was a year and
a half ago when an employee's hour tax on Seattle's largest companies passed the council, was signed into law by Mayor Durkin, only to be repealed a month later following pressure from Amazon and big business. Amazon itself halted a massive construction project in downtown Seattle during the contentious vote. That project is back in motion. So is the effort to tax Amazon. But Sawant isn't trusting the council alone to propel this tax. Her backup is letting voters decide.
Absolutely. If the council doesn't pass a tax on big business, then it should be left to the voters. We should make sure that our movement is stronger this time.
Okay. Uh, is the piece in the Seattle Times basically points out it's going to be how unions come down on this one. Unions feel as if the tax will work for them or against them, and they will be the ones that help push it. They did this in California out near where Google is, and they asked the people out there. They passed the tax, and it hit Google, and people had voted for the tax, and I think they're paying, I don't know, $6 million, which is hardly anything. But in that little area where Google is it Morningside or something like that? What's the name of that area?
Mountain View.
Yeah. Mountain View takes $6 million from the stockholders, from the customers, and from the employees, because that's where taxes come from. They come from human beings. And they put it towards roads and some other things, affordable housing. I think the biggest problem that Amazon has, and anybody else has, when they really clearly look at the city of Seattle and how inefficient it is, do you really want to give them more money just to piss away? That's the thing that upsets Amazon. It's like, look, we're not going to give you that money. You're not responsible enough. You don't do enough in order to make sure that you're effectively using it. Well, why should we give you more money? You've never shown us that you're responsible.
But if they feel that way, whether or not that's true or not, if they feel that way, what they should be doing, and I have this fantasy that I cling to from the old days, like 20, 30 years ago, where all the companies that were located in Seattle, there were like dozens of CEOs of fairly profitable companies that, in addition to running their companies, also participated in stuff like the Chamber of Commerce and in the political process.
Okay.
And they actually worked together because they had a long-term stake in what the place would look like 10, 20, 30 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So they participated. They came up with sustainable solutions to pay for stuff, but also to make sure the programs were overseen in a way that was efficient and that they did the job they were supposed to do.
Mm.
So now it's just nobody even tries that anymore in the big picture. People just argue back and forth. They argue in the media, like Sean Maswan on this Como piece we just heard.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Amazon, which is fairly secretive about how they operate, they send out their, you know, their occasional press release, or you hear from them about, you know, how much money they actually paid in taxes. There was a story a few days ago in Crosscut about how many millions of dollars they'd paid in things like property tax and that sort of thing in Seattle and King County. But there doesn't seem to be people sitting down at the table saying, like, okay, here's all the issues we have in Seattle and King County. Here's what you need to do to fix them, or what can we do to fix them, and how are we going to pay for it? Is it partly these big companies like Amazon? Sure. Is it partly property owners who own a house in Seattle or King County?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But there isn't that kind of discussion. It's just a sort of vitriolic back and forth, like socialism versus capitalism. And it's not that. It's not that black and white. It's very gray. But that takes subtlety and takes the ability to have nuanced conversations about what really makes sense.
Why do you cling to the last 20 and 30 years? I mean, seriously, do you really believe things are that great 20 or 30 years ago? Because I could bring up a whole bunch of statistics about how crappy Seattle was back then.
Oh, no, there are always problems, but people are actually working on them earnestly and were trying to actually address them in a way that made sense and they thought about the future. I mean, it took years to get Sound Transit stuff off the ground,
uh-huh.
and they were struggling back in the 60s to fund the kind of mass transit that we're finally getting now. But that was a mess the way that turned out in the late 60s and early 70s with the failure of the heavy rail system they had federal funding to produce.
Okay.
But in the meantime, it's and I'm not saying it's not some utopia. But at least it felt like there was an actual debate going on and people with skin in the game because they lived here and they had employees who lived here and they saw the future of their business remaining here. But everything's just it's the companies are all like athletes now. They can get traded to the biggest. They can move their pick up their whole operation and move it where they get a better tax deal. And that only works to a certain point, because at some point everyone gets sick of that. And it will cycle back around again, is my prediction. Another 10 or 20 years, we'll be back to the kind of a true discussion and debate rather than just these stupid arguments over and over again.
Those stupid arguments are the bread and butter of this show.
Know,
you understand
know,
that, right?
Yeah. Okay. But I'm just a guest, so I can say these kinds of things. I'm a guest.
No,
because
you want to be invited back?
I guess. Sure, it's nice. I like talking about stuff. But no, seriously, I think that. But the thoughtful conversations seem to be just totally missing at this point on these issues. I mean among the politicians and the business leaders. It's just a battle now.
And the vilification and the separation. Where you have someone like Shama Sawant, or you'd have someone like Marx or Stalin or Mussolini.
Who all served on the city council, by the way.
Yes, they did. All together. They were one. It was great. It's a powerhouse. Yeah, it's all about us and them. And you take and you slice them in half, and then you create envy and jealousy and resentment. That's the three things that Shama Sawant uses. Those are her superpowers. And she points to, they have the billionaires coming after us, the billionaires. And Bernie Sanders does the same thing. So the billionaires are the problem. So let's go after Amazon and tax Amazon, because the rest of you don't have a house. You don't make as much money because they have your money. So it's a really simple argument that has been played out. I mean, you can go all the way back to Otto von Bismarck if you want to go all the way back there. The idea, the rich have it and you can't have it. So then we're going to go get the rich and we're going to give it to you. And somehow your life is going to be better. And the government is going to come in and it's going to be the equalizing force. You'll hear Shama Sawant use the word fair. Fair is an imaginary word that is sprinkled over people's heads to make them think somehow Shama Sawant will determine through force, because that's how socialism works, that they will take the money from one group, not deserving of it, and give it to another group. And that, Felix, has been going on
for
centuries.
That's how politics works. I get that. It's divide. That's how you rile up your base and everything like that. I get that. But what's lost, again, is this ability to speak about things and about the nuances. The fact that everybody pays, right? When you pay sales tax, everyone pays sales tax. We're all paying for something right now.
Yes.
But it's not really clearly it's not clearly explained how much we're paying and what we get for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always defend infrastructure. You know how much I love infrastructure.
I know, you're so big on infrastructure.
Because the investments made in roads like 100 years ago, we're still paying off, right? We're still driving and plumbing and stuff, and like big city public works and stuff.
Yes.
We're still benefiting from that. And that's good. I mean,
I
like that stuff.
Right. Non-public good.
But no elected official. No elected official I've ever heard ever talks about like how the investment that we've all been making, people who've lived here since the late 1850s, and how we all benefit from that, and how that you just keep paying into it and paying it forward. Otherwise, the thing collapses, like what we're seeing over the last couple decades.
Now with Cory Booker out.
Today, I'm suspending my campaign for president with the same spirit.
I'm going to start to use that.
Hey,
term,
what happened to that presidential campaign you promised me last night, Corey?
I'm going to start using the word suspending as well. It's not quitting, just suspending. You're not giving up.
Yeah.
You're just going to suspend for a while.
Yeah.
Today, I'm suspending my campaign for president with the same spirit with which it began. It is my faith in us. Faith in us together as a nation.
That we have the music.
Common pain and common problems that can only be solved with a common purpose and a sense of common cause. So now I recommit myself to the work. I can't wait to get back on the campaign trail and campaign as hard as I can for whoever is the eventual nominee and for candidates up and down the ballot. But for now, I want to say thank you. Campaigning over this last year has been one of the most meaningful experiences.
Let me tell you a little behind the scenes thing. When they go to put music underneath.
Needle drop music.
It starts out. That's how this stuff. First of all, he's not paying for the music. So he's probably just general stuff.
Yeah.
It starts out. Listen to it.
Today, I'm suspending my campaign for president with the same spirit.
It starts out okay. So the guy's like, this is okay. But he never listens like 45 seconds in when it starts to pick up. By that time, it's too late. They're already committed to it. They're like, just keep it going. It's okay. No one will care. And then it's like a cacophony.
Over this last year has been one of the most meaningful experiences of my life, meeting you,
Shimbles.
Meeting people across this country.
What they type in the search engine to find that song? Campaign suspension. Bold yet strong. Strong yet suspended or something.
There it is.
Needle drop.
By the way, I read a lot about Cory Booker. I liked Cory Booker like 10, 15 years ago. He just said a lot of very conservative things. he went away. He ran against the guy and lost. No, he beat this guy. The guy was the mayor of Jersey City, New Jersey, who was caught in a prostitution sting. Was it Hoboken?
Hoboken, I think, yeah.
Caught in a prostitution sting, and apparently, and it was a club, a strip club, and also had prostitutes all underage and stuff. And he said he was in there doing some investigation behind-the-scenes work. Nice try.
Well,
good one. All right, so long, Corey.
We're going to suspend the show for the next 5 minutes, right?
And then we're coming right back. Even the pinkish, whitish hue of Laura Keel's hair did not save the Seahawks from the intimate demise that occurred there at Lambeau Field. Too bad for the Seahawks. Laura Keel goes back to her normal color hair, I guess, now that the season is over. And you can get in touch with the entire Keel team over there. If it has to do with mortgages, 1-888-778-KIEL. No one does a better job. Saw a great piece the other day saying that they expect, with limited inventory, more houses going on the market, prices are going to start to increase. You're going to need to get a pre-approval letter and make sure Keel's name is at the top. It lets everybody know you're very, very, very serious, because there's no other organization that has more respect in the industry than Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. Okay, its officials called the Red Man a racist mascot. And they got rid of it, right? What town was this in?
Killingly, Connecticut.
Okay. So they decided, you know what? It's just too offensive for everybody. We're going to get rid of it, and goodbye. We'll come up with a new mascot so nobody is offended, right?
Yeah, many communities have been doing this all around the United States. Some states have outlawed having any kind of Native American reference in a mascot or for a team name. So
yeah.
Throughout the night, people spoke out against the Redmen mascot, including teachers, students, and Native Americans. In fact, no one in the crowd spoke in support of that name. But in the end, the board decided to bring back the controversial mascot.
What? They took it away. Somebody took it away. And then some fairly conservative folks got elected there to the city council.
It's the school board. The school board in July of last year decided to change the name, get rid of the Redmen mascot and name. The school, it's been called that since 1939.
Yeah.
The students didn't mind. They changed it to the Redhawks.
Okay.
But then those were mostly Democrats on the school board. Huge wholesale losses in the election in the fall. That whole new school board moves in and takes over, and they change it back.
Supporters say they are honoring history. Critics say they are just embracing a term that is out of date and racist. Back in the summer, the school board voted to change the name from the Redmen to the Red Hawks. But in November, Republicans took control of the board, and last month they voted to get rid of the Red Hawks mascot. At last night's meeting, they voted 5-4 along party lines to bring back the Redmen as their official mascot. They say they plan to use a more politically correct logo in the future, but still, that's not sitting well with everyone.
You are all pulling the rug right from beneath us. Everywhere we go, we are the laughingstock of the state.
The most frustrating thing for me has been that it hasn't really been an honest discussion. It hasn't been a discussion based on reality.
On reality? What does that mean?
Not sure what that guy means exactly, but I mean, it seems like it's pretty clear, right? I mean, red men, describing a person, a member, a certain race by the color of their skin.
Uh-huh.
That's not really politically correct anymore. It was for a long time. We're talking just the recent past.
Yeah.
This wasn't a big deal. This is all really spiked up in the last decade or so. The Washington Redskins still refuse. They refuse to change their name. Mm-hmm. And I think some broadcasters only refer to them as Washington. They don't actually mention the
team. What's the best way to settle this? Because some people want it, other people don't. Is it a poll? You want to poll a bunch of Native Americans? Good. That's exactly what they did. And 9 out of 10 Native Americans not offended by the name Redskin. 9% were. 90% were not. 1% had no opinion at all. This is from the Washington Post and Chicago Tribune, as well as the New York Times and NBC. So they said to a bunch of Native Americans, are you upset by that? They're like, nah, doesn't bother us. So what you do is you have a small percentage of people that are in the victimization business, which is we are constantly being victimized. And this is one more example of how we are oppressed or put down. So if you have that mascot, then it's a big problem for us. That's why our lives are so crappy, because you refer to this high school team as the Redmen. If you had gotten rid of that thing, things would be so much better for us.
Yeah, but I think I would say there's some percentage of people, Native Americans or otherwise, who are legitimately and sincerely offended by this. And so what do you lose by going from Redmen to Redhawks? I mean, what's the great loss there?
Well, what if the 90% say, hey, we actually like the honor. We want to be, we have no problem with it. Is the person offended? If they're offended, you got to get the majority say, are you guys all offended by this thing? So 9% are. Now, I'm not going to get into judging. Well, I will. Why they are offended. But, they decide, yeah, that's offensive to me. So they want to see change. Get rid of the offensive name, and then everything will be better. I know they did that in Radnor, Pennsylvania. I went to school down the street from there. I think they were the Redmen as well. The city council now comes in. I don't know how many of these guys campaigned on, hey, if you vote for me, I'll go back to the old mascot.
Yeah, it was only one vote. It was a one vote difference, 5-4. So it wasn't like an overwhelming amount. But at the meeting, nobody spoke in favor of keeping returning to the Redmen mascot.
Okay.
But they voted for it anyway. And they did quote a guy in this New York Times piece, quoted one of the school board members, I think, who said they're essentially, this is the best reflection of the U.S. and our history and the great cultural melting pot. I don't know if the natives view the, settlers coming with their diseases and their other things and wiping out the majority of the population as the melting pot exactly. Uh-huh. But there is what's lost, I think, in the debate is the history.
Yeah.
There's parts of the country where the Native Americans are just gone. There's just no evidence anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where they were once, the only people there.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems sad to me. This seems like an opportunity. If there's some way to make this educational, referring to something that talks about skin color just seems like not a good idea moving forward. And we can admit that, and we can even if 90% of the people think they're not offended by it.
Yeah.
Did they actually ask them,
are
you in favor of keeping it?
No, but
are they in favor? Did they say they're in favor of keeping it, or they're not offended by it?
They're not offended by it. So that must mean that they passively are okay with keeping it. If you're offended, you want to do something about it. They probably have other things they're concerned about, as opposed to somebody asking whether or not the team is named after the Redskins. Here's the question. At what point do the Irish sober up and go after Notre Dame and start fighting Notre Dame on their mascot. Now, wouldn't that be ironic? So the Irish and the Fighting Irish are there. I remember seeing a funny comedian did a thing where he went in and complained to the school because of Lucky Charms, and they didn't like, yeah, I see you, Sully. What does it say? Yeah. What's your stupid sign thing say? I can't read it from here.
Play like a champion today. With,
Is that some type of Irish?
Well, he's got a green
screen
shirt
with a shamrock
on
it.
There you go. Oh, yeah.
But the color, but the shamrock is green. We're not talking about Irish people's skin being green. And we're not saying about like the Fighting Irish.
He went,
like, they don't
Sully,
not,
Sully
the
went to Notre Dame. Hold on. He just walked in. Oh. Hang on.
I'm not doing anything. I'm just standing here.
Hang on. Hang on. 1 second. Hey, Sully. Can you,
I heard you guys talking about
can
Notre Dame.
You close the door as you leave?
Yeah, I will. Yeah.
It's drafty. It's cold out here.
Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish. How many Irishmen are offended by that?
None.
Why not? Because the Irish fight all the time?
No, because it wasn't named after the Fighting Irish like that. It was named after a military brigade back in the day that became, because of their fighting status, became known as the Fighting Irish.
Okay.
So the early immigrants at there at Notre Dame who took this over just kind of adopted that. It's not what you think. They're drunken fighting Irish people, even though their leprechaun does kind of look like that. No, it was named after a fighting brigade, and that's it to honor them. Yeah.
All right.
Play like a champion today.
So good.
Come
we
on.
Agree.
All right. There he goes.
Disparaging my university.
No. All right. The door is busy.
Yeah, it's going to need some.
No, don't put anything on.
Can engineering come and oil that thing?
No, we wouldn't know if it's coming or going. Right back. That is our text line, sponsored by State Roofing. When you think of State Roofing, you think of our text line, 98973, don't you? It all makes perfect sense. Thank you very much for reminding me of that, Andrew. Felix is in because Tom is too lazy to get on an early flight and fly here
supping
from L.A.
Supping on petty fours, I think, probably in the VIP room.
I would say he's probably not in the VIP room. He's sitting there looking over at the granola thinking, should I buy that? No, I want everything's for free. He could have gotten an early flight. Their flight's early out of L.A. They would have made it in here in time, but nope. Yes, Felix, come in. Felix, good to have you. Here's a story that bitter Brian Buckaloo, who used to have a legitimate job here at Cairo, sent us over the weekend. Apparently some woman in his neighborhood on one of those, like, lookout for...
It's called Next Door, I think is what it's called.
Posted what?
Well, it's a comment about an animal that was sighted in the neighborhood, and then it was sighted once and sighted again and again, and it hasn't really moved much in the last several weeks or several days. Mm-hmm. And this is this is the original post here.
Okay,
this is Lee. I'm not going to use any last names, and it's titled "Dead Rat and Sidewalk." For the last week, there's been an enormous dead rat in the middle of the sidewalk on the south corner of 39th and Hudson. I live a few blocks away, and I can't really avoid it. Every day, I have to walk past it and get my dog to not nibble the corpse, etc. Tonight, I tripped over it. So gross. I filled out the form for dead animal removal, but the form told me that for wildlife less than 15 pounds, I should double bag it and place it in the trash. I guess I could just do it myself, but it's not my house, and so doesn't feel like my obligation to dispose of the corpse.
She tripped over it.
That's.
And then once she put this up here, once Lee put this up here, then everybody there in that little neighborhood of Columbia City East got a chance to respond to it.
Yeah, someone named Angel says, just take a doggy poop bag and get rid of it.
Right.
That's, all right.
Nick says... Seriously, just push it out of the way with a stick. Pick it up. Put it in a trash bag. We might be at war soon. There are millions of people being prosecuted all over the world. We can't deal with minor annoyances right now.
And then Shana said, too bad it's not a fresher corpse. I hear that rat, or maybe possum, fricassee is quite good this time of year.
I don't live there. Why should it be my responsibility to pick it up? BTW, due to the size, I think it may actually be a dead possum.
Regardless of how you consider small mammals that share our neighborhood, it was a living thing. They all do valuable work for us to keep the environment in balance. Where is compassion here?
Isn't there a dead rat removal app? Like Rover, but not quite.
Yeah, in the time it took to make this post, you probably could have dealt with it If you don't want to, leave a note on the door of the house it's in front of. Or gasp, knock, and ask them.
If you don't want to deal with it, walk on the other side of the street. Mary Chestnut.
It's on the sidewalk. That belongs to the city. Have at it.
There we go. I think we covered that one.
Yeah, it's good. That's the people of that neighborhood. I sure feel like they're paying attention. Local news, hyper local. That's
now,
what, that's
if we
what
were
radio
to poll
do.
These people like they did the Native Americans regarding what percentage of people would not care about the rat, I think you're down to only 1%. Everybody jumps in. I like the guy saying that we'll be at war soon. I'd like to be his neighbor.
Keep it all in perspective. Yeah, you know, I can see that point of view.
Can you really?
Well, things have calmed down. I mean, a week ago, right, we all would have been saying the same.
What's amazing is it was such a remarkable rat, the size of it, and she had to keep her dog from nibbling on the corpse, but still the next day, she trips over. Wouldn't you remember? There's a rat right over in that general area.
Could have been dark.